Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. College coaches can make millions. College sports coffers take in billions. College athletes get scholarships and a little more. Is it enough in an era when college sports have gone so big money? As March Madness heads toward the men's final tonight in Houston, Butler versus UConn, it's an open question, a live question. This hour On Point, is it time to share the wealth, more of the wealth, with the college athletes doing the playing? Or is that still sacrilege? Here over the weekend was CBS announcer Steve Kerr on Saturday night as VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, gave up the ghost and Indiana's Butler University was set to go to the finals.
This shows how final the NCAA tournament is. Unless you win that last game on Monday night, that sense of finality and pain and suffering. I mean, this VCU team has been on such a great run, but they believed they were going to win Monday night. And now the dream's over.
Dream over for VCU, but not for little Butler back in the big game tonight. Joining me from Houston is Pablo Torre. He's a writer at Sports Illustrated and is in Houston to cover tonight's championship game between the Butler Bulldogs and UConn Huskies. Pablo, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be here, Tom.
So we'll have listeners who know these teams inside and out and others who may not have paid any attention. Describe this matchup, how we got here, and what we'll see in the game tonight, Pablo.
Right. Well, Butler, I mean, the story starts with them, as you said, a tiny school, college basketball-wise, out of Indiana. I mean, they're the team whose home gym, Hinkle Fieldhouse, was the stage, literally, for Hoosiers and where the famous championship game that Hoosiers was based on was played. And really, I mean, they're on an unprecedented run this year. They're in a title game for the second straight year in a row. They made it in Indianapolis last year and lost to Duke
right
at the last second. And now they're back in the title game again, which is really, really, you know, not unprecedented, but really, really rare in college basketball. It's rare for any school to make it back-to-back years in the title game. It's only happened a handful of times in the past 25 years. And the fact that they're a so-called mid-major school, not one of the big powerhouses from the so-called, football schools, the real revenue-generating schools, is even more incredible. And they're matched up against Connecticut, which is probably, I mean, when you drill down to the way the seasons have gone, I mean, Connecticut's from the Big East. They've won this championship before. Their coach, Jim Calhoun, has won it already. But this year, they're maybe more like a Cinderella than maybe Butler is. Their season had so many ups and downs. They're really relying on the skills of one player, point guard Kemba Walker, out of New York. And they've made it, now without some bit of controversy with recruiting violations and so forth, which is par for the course, really,
these
in
days.
The big money schools. But, yeah, it'll be Butler and UConn tonight, and it should be a great game.
Remind us, Pablo, back when everybody was filling out their brackets, you know, weeks ago now, this is not the matchup people expected on this night. From the president right on out, what were people looking to be in this final game?
Yeah, people were looking for a number one seed to be in this final game. I think Ohio State was really the top-seeded team entering the tournament. Also, you'd look at teams like Duke, for example, or Pittsburgh. This is something that almost nobody in the country picked. And that's verified by statistics. I think it's like fractions of a percent had this exact matchup in the final game, and certainly very few people thought Butler would be back. Butler barely made it into the tournament. They really had to win their conference tournament to get the automatic bid to get to the NCAA tournament. They didn't really have a resume necessarily that was strong enough on its own to even make it. And UConn, as I said, needed to win. I mean, they've been on a winning streak starting with their conference tournament, the Big East tournament, and they've won every game since then, and they've really just been so hot. And yeah, this is not the game that people expected, but it may be, you know, it has the potential to be as good a game, as dramatic a game as last year's, with two teams that should play down to the wire.
Amateur or not, a whole lot of Americans have placed their little office pool or more on this. How's it being called? What are the odds people are laying in advance, do you know?
Yeah, UConn is being favored by, I think the line actually shrunk down from like 4.5 points to 3.5 points, according to Vegas. So UConn is the favorite. But what we're seeing now is betting action moving in favor of Butler. And my personal, I mean, it's a fairly split audience, I think. You know, it's a good argument for either team, but my feeling is Butler is going to come out with this. And that's just because they've played so disciplined and they're so methodical and have the championship game experience from last year. It's really surreal to be in these locker rooms. You know, last year I was in Indianapolis following Butler, and there was such an element of these hometown kids. It was Hoosiers come to life. It was the Cinderella story, the dream come true, going up against Big Bad Duke. But this year, the Butler kids are really the savvy veterans in this case. UConn has a lot of freshmen and sophomores. They don't have the big stage experience that, ironically, a school like Butler has. And it's for any college basketball reporter who's kind of weathered and cynical, as undoubtedly so many of us are, it's so surprising still to see Butler in this position and them being as treated as the incumbents. But what my vision on it is that we have Butler winning 61-59, the reverse score of what they lost by against Duke, and they lost on a last-second miss at the buzzer,
right,
and I
right.
think Butler emerges unscathed.
Famously last year, that would be some kind of maybe divine justice. You've been there in Houston. I mean, we're talking about money in this hour, and it was last June that the NCAA landed this 14-year, $10.8 billion contract with CBS and Turner Sports to broadcast March Madness for 14 years there. Can you understand the scale of the kind of fan adulation and following and frenzy in the air that makes this franchise, can we call it that, worth that kind of money, Pablo?
Yeah, you know, you cover sports and sometimes you get desensitized to the money involved just because you're in it so much and it sort of comes to seem natural. But there was a moment in the semifinal game when they announced, and all these games are now held at football stadiums, and there was a moment where they announced that the attendance for one of the semifinal games was like 73,000 people, which is a record all time for the Final Four. And it's just moments like that when you realize, Jesus, I mean, this is such a big money event, so wide in scope. These coaches, I mean, look at the salaries of all these coaches. They're paid so much. You know, the revenues that are brought in are so dramatic, the boosters and all of that, which, of course, leads into the problems we have in terms of players being paid on the side and all the recruiting violations therein. It's a big money business, and no one, I think, has any illusions about that. And that's honestly why seeing Butler in the title game ends up puncturing that vision a little bit. It's so refreshing to see a school that has had no history of impropriety, that has had only, you know, it has made do with a recruiting budget of about $55,000, which is pennies compared to what a UConn or a Duke or Ohio State gets annually. It's really amazing to see the contrast set like that.
Kind of a delight to see that big money bubble punctured a little bit right there in the great championship game. We're going to look at all of that in this hour. Pablo Torre with Sports Illustrated, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Pablo Torre joining us there from Houston. You can follow his Twitter feed at @SiPabloTorre. Enjoy the game tonight, Pablo. Here's CBS Sports' Jim Nant over the weekend describing the last moments of Saturday's UConn versus Kentucky game. Big Kentucky, as UConn dashed Kentucky's prospects with only a single point.
Kentucky falls 1 point short, and UConn has done it again. Backs to the wall, and now back to a championship game. Butler and Connecticut, your national championship matchup, 2011.
And it is tonight. Joining me now from Washington is Kevin Blackistone. He's national columnist for the AOL sports website, fanhouse.com, frequent panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn Sports Roundtable, teaches journalism at the University of Maryland. Kevin Blackistone, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So here we are talking money, and it's not just us. It's the president of the NCAA
right.
who said, no way I want to have our players paid, but maybe we've got to bring it up and we've got to talk about it. Maybe it ought to be a little more rich for them in this arena. And you've said, Kevin, amen. Why?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's a sea change comment from the head of the NCAA. Because never before have they even pondered the idea of remunerating the athletes who bring in all this money to all these institutions and the NCAA in particular. And now he's opening the idea to actually looking at that. And you absolutely have to do it. As you just said earlier, pointed out in the piece, the money is just ridiculous now. How much money is brought in through basketball and football, and how little winds up going back to the athletes. The NCAA is famous, and they're doing it right now, doing the tournament, for putting on their public service announcements to talk about how much of their money goes back to student athletes and to students and how well they're doing in the classroom, even doing better than other students that matriculate at universities without playing sports. But the fact of the matter is that this is an unbelievable imbalance. And I think, like a friend of mine, Skip Oliva, down at the University of Virginia, is famous for saying now, it's time to stop talking about paying the players and it's time to start talking about treating them as the employees of the university that they really are.
You know, that's even now, after all these years of big money, that's going to hit a lot of ears as just sacrilege. Come on, it's college. It's a great opportunity for them. They've got scholarships. What do you mean treat them like employees?
Because they are employees. Do you realize that if UConn wins this championship game tonight, that Kemba Walker, their star player, is going to get a cap, a jersey, a pat on the back, a lot of adulation, and then he'll, of course, go on to the NBA. But the guy he's playing for, and Jim Calhoun, is going to get an $87,000 bonus to go on top of his $2.3 million salary.
Kevin Blackistone joins us from Washington. And Kevin, it's the new NCAA president, Mark Emmert himself, who is put this on the table. I mean, the conversation's been around a long time, but why is he saying now, well, okay, maybe we should do something more here?
I think because the imbalance in the data in terms of the money and what the players are getting in terms of the value of a college education, and you can put whatever number you want to on that, has just become nauseating. And I think that there's some concern that at some point this may wind up on Capitol Hill. NCAA has they're protected by a nonprofit status, mm-hmm. and clearly they're not a nonprofit institution. And these universities are also protected by that. And clearly, when it comes to athletics like football and basketball, which are referred to as revenue generating, they are not nonprofit and they are able to hide behind that. So I think a lot of this is really going to come to a head now. And then also you have these other stories about players and their parents being investigated for sticking up universities for money to let their kids play there.
Cam Newton and
Patrick Peterson's new story that just broke. But all of this really pales in comparison to what else is going on.
Let's hear a little bit of tape of Mark Emmert. This is the NCAA president from a couple of venues here. First, telling PBS's investigative show Frontline. And he's going straight against here, Kevin, your notion that players are effectively and ought to be seen as employees. He's saying, to that, anyway, he's saying, no, thank you.
I can't say often enough, obviously, that student-athletes are students. They are not employees.
And here he goes right on describing that student-athlete status.
These are student-athletes participating in an athletic activity on their campus at their institution. And they have access to the best educational opportunities that we find in the United States.
okay, that's a line we've heard and heard for a long time. Keep them amateur. Come on. They've got already scholarships and great. But here's the kind of changing flexibility coming into that. This is just last Thursday on ESPN. Mark Emmert, again, president of the NCAA, hinting at a change in policy from an adamant no on compensating athletes to a kind of maybe on some perks, just maybe.
One of the issues that I wanted to take up with the membership was whether or not it made sense to move toward a grant and aid model that covered full cost of attendance, which is a completely different notion than compensating players. The answer may be that doesn't make sense today and we don't want to do it, but it's an important question that at least we raise among the membership and we talk about.
Kevin Blackstone, what does that mean is really on the table here? A grant and aid model that covered the full cost of attendance. I guess that means college attendance. I mean, what do college athletes, top college athletes, get now in terms of scholarship plus, plus, plus? And what does Emmert appear to be pointing at as a possible expansion?
Well, what they get right now is room, board, tuition. And then if they're at a really, really big money institution like Texas or Oregon or Ohio State or Auburn or Alabama, they get all these other perks that come along with being a student athlete, like these unbelievable workout facilities, first class travel around the country, staying in the best of hotels. And oh, by the way, this is my sixth semester teaching at the University of Maryland, and I've had just a handful of athletes in some of my classes, but they also get to organize their athletic schedule around their academics. So that the notion that Mark Emmert is promoting there and that has been promoted by the NCAA forever, that these are student athletes and they're student first, is an absolutely specious argument, because if that were the case, then they wouldn't come to me with a sheet made out by the athletic department excusing them from certain classes because of their athletic schedule. No other students on the campus get to excuse themselves from their academic schedule based on something else that's going on that's an extracurricular activity. So what Mark Emmert is doing there is trying to make things sound as if they're going to change and change for the better and maybe give the student athlete a little larger cut of the loaf of bread that athletics is baking up for these universities. I just don't think that holds up.
Well, I mean, the NCAA puts out numbers. They say that athletic scholarships cover a median kind of average of $27,923 in cost each year at the 120 schools. That's in the top football subdivision. Beyond that, players get equipment, apparel, complimentary game admissions for family and friends, tutoring, academic support. USA Today put together all that, folded in stuff like, you know, coaching and media exposure, impact on future earnings. I don't know how they calculated this, but they said current package worth $120,000 a year. Do you know what Emmert's talking about adding here that would change the,
I don't know what he could add. I mean, the only thing you can really add are salaries. I mean, that is the only thing you can add. I mean, sure, they give them this quote-unquote free ride, but kids are laboring to make that. There have been studies to show that the NCAA ceiling of 20 hours per week for an athlete to work on his or her sport when in season is usually abused, and they work maybe as much as twice as much, almost a full work week, and then still have to go to class, matriculate, keep their grades up so that they can remain eligible to play their sport. There is an awful lot of pressure on these student athletes. And not only that, but, you know, we're in a time in this country when state legislatures are cutting back more and more on higher educational funding. And as a result, what are college presidents and the Board of Regents doing? They're looking for some other streams of revenue, and one of the easiest streams of revenue for them to get is from their athletic department. So once again, they turn to the coaches and turn to these players in hope that they're going to generate the extra revenue that they need to run their universities that's coming less and less from taxpayers.
So make it real, Kevin. We're going to hear in just a moment a voice who's in opposition to pushing the wealth in this direction, but you say you would. You say it's only right. What would you do? You're going to make these college players into, you know, student millionaires?
You know what? I'm actually beyond just paying the players. I think that college football and college basketball need to be removed from the college campus as they are now and set up as for-profit entities that they really are, and basically do what they're doing now and lease the name and lease the colors of the schools that they're associated with and run their programs like that. And they can still cut a check back to the university, which most of them do. They can set up some type of contractual arrangement between the players that they have and the school so that those players who want to go to school can do that and not make a mockery of higher education, and that those students, that those athletes who don't want to go to school and want to basically major in their athletic endeavor can do that. And everyone can be paid some sort of salary, just like all the coaches that they're playing for.
But wouldn't that just be like setting up another pro league, just happens to be owned by the colleges and universities?
Let's remove the pretense, because that's exactly what these situations are. When the NBA and its union have created a situation that players must go to school for 1 year at least between getting out of high school and declaring eligible for the NBA draft, then that's what the NCAA basketball arena has become. It's become a minor league for the NBA.
I want to go to David Williams at Vanderbilt. Let me get one call here first, if I may. Charleston, South Carolina. Renee is on the line. Hi, Renee. Thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you know, my friend?
I played D1 basketball for 3 years, and I just wanted to make a comment that it's totally true. We're constantly, quote-unquote, volunteering our time, which is not voluntary, and it does approach 40 hours a week, and you're tired, and you're trying to do schoolwork, and I just think it's easy for the people who are making the millions of dollars to say that the athletes are fine. It would be nice to leave college with a little nest egg, especially for women, because our NBA options or WNBA is not necessarily going to happen.
So you'd like to be paid, treated as an employee?
Absolutely. I think that we bring money into the school, and we sacrifice a lot of time and have to do our schoolwork. And granted, an education is great, but in my case, once I got in state back in the day, it was only like $6,000 that my tuition was. And I get out of school, I still have loans, but, you know, it'd be nice to have a little pocket to start your future with.
So you've lived it, played it at the Division I level. Let me just put something to you, Renee, since you've called. Bill Walton, I'm quoting from the great basketball Hall of Famer Bill Walton here, who, of course, he was Player of the Year three times, NCAA Player of the Year, back in the 70s. Now, I know that's a long time ago, but here's what he says on this. He says, the young players entering the college game know the rules going in. They're being given a chance to make something of their lives in exchange for the privilege of being an NCAA student athlete. He says no to pay. What do you say to that, Renee?
Well, I definitely think a lot has changed, and if it doesn't get handled above board, we're already seeing that it's popping out in other ways, because people know the value of athletics now. And you're seeing people violate the NCAA rules to get around it, to get the talent in. And some people are even going straight to the NBA because they don't want to risk injury for playing for free for 4 years. You know, and they say it's a better move for me to go straight to the NBA, get some money, and start my career. And it's putting a lot of things, I think, of what they want a student athlete to be on the line. So why don't you deal with the problem that's already there?
Renee, I appreciate getting it straight from you, somebody who's played at Division I level and wished you had come out after all that commitment of time with a little nest egg, as you put it there. Thanks for calling. Kevin Blackstone, stand by. I want to turn to Nashville, Tennessee, and David Williams. He's Vice Chancellor for University Affairs and Athletics at Vanderbilt, has directed the Department of Student Athletics there since 2003, previously oversaw the Department of Athletics at Ohio State. He knows big-time college sports. David Williams, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom, and thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. You've no doubt heard Mark Emmert saying it's time for the NCAA to sit back and consider something more here. Do you think there ought to be some greater reward at this point for student athletes, David? There's something either big time, separated out, you know, just pay them, treat it as a kind of a corporate wing of the colleges, or just, I don't know, hike up the scholarships or spending money a little more. Is there room to share the wealth here, David? Should it be?
Well, I think you have to look at it in a lot of different ways. And if you talk about whether or not the student athletes should be employees or should we have, as you say, a corporate wing, I totally disagree with that. I still think we have to think very seriously about the concept of amateurism and the concept that this is a part of an institution of higher education. If you look tonight and you take that Butler off and that University of Connecticut off, you just basically have a minor league type of basketball. And quite honestly, you're not going to have the fan loyalty that you have because it is a university activity. Now, I think that where the problem is, I think people run and say there's a lot of money coming in, mm-hmm. so let's pay the athletes. The fact of the matter is I still think the primary exchange for their participation is a college education. A college education is a valuable commodity in our society. Where I think we have to do a better job is on twofold. One, I agree with Mark in the sense that we need to examine the scholarship and make sure the scholarship moves in proportion with both the cost of things, sort of the increase in the cost of things, and also the amount of money coming in. But I think the most important thing is we need to make the scholarship, the college scholarship, as it relates to the college education, a real factor. And so I think it really looks upon the universities and the NCAA to create more focus on that college education. Now, you asked the one question about, well, what could be some of the things? Well, you know, there is the possibility to say, well, if you complete your degree, mm-hmm. since we have this money, maybe there's a pot of money for you, say, to go to graduate school or professional school. Mm-hmm. I still contend that the investment that we put in a college education is large, and it's not just the money that we pay for the individual to go to school. It's the increased earnings one can have with a college degree. It's the selectability to get into a certain college. So I'm not in favor of the student-athlete being employees. I am in favor of us making sure they're student-athletes and actually examining every year what the extent of that scholarship is and how it should be structured.
I want to look at the nuance of that with you and Kevin Blackstone, but let me just ask you. You say education is still number one here, but we all know what some of the dropout rates are, and they can be pretty bad. I mean, you had the Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan, who's played a lot of basketball himself, saying yesterday that if a school can't keep at least half of its athletes on pace to graduate, it shouldn't be allowed to compete in the NCAA championship. It should be cut out of the multimillion-dollar postseason payout from that tournament. I mean, you've got 10, at least 10 out of the 68 schools in Division I men's tournament on track to graduate fewer than half of their players, David.
I couldn't agree more with the Secretary. I think he's absolutely right. I've advocated that for a long time, is that if you can't graduate a certain percentage, you shouldn't be in the tournament. I think we have to be sort of proactive in policing our own profession and say, basically, you know, this is an education institution. And if you're not keeping your student athletes on track to graduate and graduate, then you shouldn't be able to share in that. And so I don't disagree with that at all. And I would go further to say, I think that should be a component. I know Kevin spoke about the whole concept of the nonprofit piece of it. I think that should be a component as we look at whether or not a university and its athletic department should be nonprofit. It should look to the amount of graduation.
Kevin Blackstone, we just got half a minute before the break, but here's David Williams, and you see where he's worked, what he's done, and he says it's still about the education, my friend, the value of that education.
Well, I think that's the romantic view. I wish that were true, but you know, the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of things that suggest that's not the case. One I would just point to is the fact that athletic scholarships are believed by the public to be four-year deals. The truth is that they're one-year deals, and that for whatever reasons, if at the end of a year, an academic year, a kid isn't liked by his coach anymore, or some other situation comes up, they can be shown the door. Just like that. So athletics in a lot of ways still runs the academic lives of these so-called student athletes.
got some callers here. We'll hear in just a moment from a former college player who's suing now for a piece of the money that comes in even after players move beyond college. Ed O'Bannon will join us from Nevada. But first, Jack in Middletown, Rhode Island. Jack, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just can't believe that recently in the news there was a football player who likened the NFL to slavery. And I wouldn't liken the NFL to slavery. Those fellows make great profits as they play and take the risks that they do. But certainly I could liken the NCAA to slavery. I mean, those kids work very, very hard. They make huge, huge profits for their institutions, and yet they're paid peanuts. And I think that's a glaring example of just the youth of America being taken advantage of in a terrible way.
But Jack, they got a scholarship. They've got a shot at education. They've got a shot at a pro career if they want that. I mean, it doesn't seem like nothing in return.
Well, it is something in return. Let's put the heat on the institutions and make them guarantee that those kids do get college education, no matter what. And if they don't get a college education, if they don't complete, then take away their ability of these institutions to give scholarships. Don't allow them to give scholarships unless those they give them to pass and graduate from college with a viable degree. I think it's terrible the way some of these kids do nothing, and they're very weak students. Let's not fool ourselves. They're very, very, very weak students, but they're great basketball players or great football players.
Well, let's not lose sight of the good students in the mix, but yeah, it can be rough on that front, and I appreciate your call. One more, Hazard, Kentucky. Sean, you're on the air, Sean.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I've been listening in, and I think that student-athletes shouldn't be paid, rather, to participate in college athletics. As a former grad of the University of Kentucky, it's frustrating to see students go 1 year and then be finished, basically, because, I mean, there really is no incentive to stay when they're being paid so much going to the NBA. You know, I think in today's economy, college education is valuable, and it's something to fall back on, and they should be given more incentive to stay. And it's frustrating to see these players take off after 1 year. I can speak for many UK fans.
I'm sure, and many do. And sorry, Kentucky, not in that big game tonight, but quite a team. Sean, I appreciate that. One more, Washington, D.C., Rex. Rex, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
I was wondering if these athletes do get paid, what happens to the scholarship money? Would they be responsible for what that money provides? And where do we draw the line on the level of compensation between better teams or schools' cost of tuition?
Well, we've got a whole range of things going on here. Let's dive in and look at it a little bit. I mean, Kevin, Rex in Washington, thanks for your call. Kevin, you're putting out, in a way, the most extreme position here, which is, separate the teams from the school. I guess they become like a wholly owned subsidiary mm-hmm. with money flowing back to the school. Does academics in that vision bleed entirely out of it? And are you just smoking something there? I mean, is that ever
going
to happen?
I think David Williams could even speak to this, having been at Ohio mm-hmm. State. I'm not exactly sure what the setup is like at Tennessee, but more and more over the last 10 to 15 years, athletic departments at really large universities have basically set themselves up as separate entities. If you go to Louisville right now, you go into downtown Louisville. Downtown Louisville just built a spanking brand new centerpiece in their city, which is a basketball arena for the Louisville Cardinals basketball team. That may as well be that city's professional franchise. It's not connected to the campus. It is a separate entity to draw in as much money through selling Louisville Cardinal basketball as possible to benefit the coffer of the university. Now, a lot of other schools are doing that. I think Ohio State basically has a separate operation. I'm impressed that Mr. Williams also happens to have another title beyond director of athletics that ties him into the front office at Tennessee, which, by the way, I read they had a budget surplus of $4 million or something like
we're
that.
We're talking Vanderbilt athletics. Here.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Vanderbilt, right. Mm-hmm. At Tennessee the other year, they had mm-hmm. like a $4 million profit. So, and a few years ago, I think Vanderbilt was one of the schools that led this charge that no one else followed to basically do away with the athletic department and have the university actually run actually run sports. So I think it's a very, you know, it's a very complicated issue, but I think academics could be part of it. As I stated, for students who want to concentrate on sports, let them do that. For those who want to still matriculate and get a higher education degree, create a contract for them to be able to do that with the university that they're playing for.
David Williams in Nashville, let's start with the extreme. Sounds extreme still to me anyway. What about the full divorce vision of this, where you set this up as a, you know, kind of a profit-making thing, a subsidiary of the university in a way, revenues flowing back to the university, then they can come back after their quote-unquote college career to get a college education if they wanted to. Could that work? Can you imagine Mark Emmert actually ever breathing such words before the NCAA board?
No, I can't imagine that, and I think you run the risk of losing that loyal fan base that associates the college athletics with the university.
But when you say that, it sounds just like a profit issue, the fan base. You're just talking about customers almost.
Well, the fan base is some customers, but it's also the students, the faculty, mm-hmm. the staff, the parents, all of that. And, you know, I think that Kevin has said a very interesting point, and I want to thank him for the compliment he gave us at Vanderbilt. But at Vanderbilt, which we're a small private school in a very, very tough athletic conference, mm-hmm. maybe the toughest, Southeast Conference, we have 16 sports. 10 of those sports actually make it to postseason. Our baseball team actually is ranked number one. These are student athletes. We graduate 96% of our student athletes. Our scholarship for student athlete is worth $250,000 on just dollars paid. But the value of that education is much greater. Now, I go back to my point. I think that we have a lot of work to do to basically make it better. We do need to be police ourselves more. We need to enforce the 20-hour rule. Maybe it should be less. But I do think there's a huge value in that college education. And let me say one other thing. A lot of that money that comes in actually supports a lot more sports. You know, there's only really two sports that generate money, as you said, men's basketball and football. Women's basketball hopefully breaks even in some places, and baseball starts to approach that. But many schools run as many as 35 sports, and a lot of that money goes to pay for those student athletes. I worry also about the payment because, as one of the callers said, I think you start to get into a real tough sort of situation. Who gets paid? How you pay them? How much? Is it because your program makes a lot of money? Well, you look at a situation at a Kentuckian basketball and how much money they bring in, and then you go to another Division I school that really doesn't bring in a lot of money. So how do you determine the fairness of that? One thing I would agree that Kevin said, I think we have to examine things like the scholarship. You know, there are schools that, yes, it's 1 year and they run you off. It doesn't have to be that way. It can be a four-year deal, and it can also be one where, no, you can't be run off because the coach doesn't like you. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we have a perfect setup. I am saying that the answer to what we're doing wrong is not to pay the student-athlete. It's to really, really make them student-athletes.
So if we're going to tweak it, not shake it up entirely, how would you change the scholarship payouts or the rest? Is there some way that you could see more cash or cash value ending up in students' pockets? What might that look like, David Williams?
Yeah, I think the first thing, as Mark said, is I think the college scholarship has to, at a minimum, reach the cost of attendance. It's interesting that an athletic scholarship can be less than what our financial aid department would say is the cost of attendance. So I think that's the first thing. It bothers us when we see some of our young people who come from areas where they don't have a lot of money and struggling to have that spending money. So I think they need to be put on that status where they can function like the average student at our university. And then I'm a big advocate of actually saying yes, and for those of you student athletes that complete your college degree, we will be able to set aside some money if you want to do something in the future. And I kind of see that future as going to grad school, going to professional school. But I think one could say, well, maybe I don't want to do that. I want to start a business. Mm-hmm. Maybe we do have some nest egg for that. I think that's totally different from paying the student athlete. That's providing the student athlete with a real scholarship and a boost as they go forward in life.
May not be pay, but it is a payoff. Kevin? Yeah.
Yeah, Tom, I was just going to say, you know, this idea is really going back to the ancient days of college football, back at the turn of the century, when some of the big programs actually did pay players to play for their schools who had absolutely nothing to do with what was going on in the academic environment. And, of course, the NCAA came along and changed a lot of that. But I would say one thing to what David pointed out, you know, Vanderbilt's a special situation within the Southeastern Conference. I mean, I think most people think of Vanderbilt as an academic institution playing in the wild and woolly SEC. But I don't think that a lot of schools and a lot of fans in the SEC, maybe Vanderbilt would be different, would care who is wearing the colors of their school if, in fact, we went to a situation like I'm advocating, that the athletic department was separate and they put together their team. I don't think the fans of Alabama or Auburn would care whether or not those students are actually students or if they're paid guns by the athletic department to
I don't know, to me, the Tigers, or
the Crimson Tide a championship.
You may be right, Kevin, but to me that's like hiring, you know, semi-pro gladiators to go out and do it for you. I mean, at least the mythology that it's students who you walk with carrying books during the day who go out and win at night has got powerful charm to it.
Yeah, but we have that mythology about the coaches. Coaches change jobs 2 and 3 years. Kentucky just hired a basketball coach who's and paying him over $4 million a year in John Calipari, who's been at a number of programs, and they brought him in there simply to win a championship. And if he doesn't, I assume they'll be gone and try and find somebody else.
Kevin, David, stand by. If you'd be good enough, David, I've got Ed O'Bannon standing by here, and I want to get him in because he has lived the life. He's played this ball. He joins us right now from Henderson, Nevada. Now, Ed O'Bannon was star power forward for UCLA in their men's basketball team in their 1995 NCAA championship team. Played for a couple of years in NBA, then another 8 years professionally in 6 different countries. He's been around. He's now a sales and marketing manager at an auto dealership in Las Vegas. Ed, I'm sorry. I know I kept you waiting there, but I'm so grateful to you for being with us, Ed. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And you've got a suit going on right now, suing the NCAA over its use of former student-athletes' images like your own in DVDs and video games, photographs, apparel, all that. What are you looking for, Ed?
Just compensation in a nutshell. I think once a player leaves school, leaves campus, and starts their life after their campus life, after going to school, they should be able to take their likeness with them. And if their likeness is used that's basically it. If their likeness is used, they should be compensated for it.
And what about people who would say, you know, Ed, okay, but you got a UCLA education, you got a couple seasons in the NBA, and another 8 years beyond that of pro ball. Isn't that enough?
It absolutely isn't enough. I mean, if it's your likeness, you should be able to control it. If it's my face that is being put on a commercial, if it's up on a billboard or
in a video game, is that happening? Is it happening now, Ed? Is that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, look, if my likeness is being used in a video game, I should be able to be compensated for it. It just doesn't make any sense to me for it not to be.
David, there's the lawsuit, David Williams. If you were to sit in judgment on this one, how about it? Should the NCAA own Ed O'Bannon's likeness forever, watching him beautifully play the game in a, you know, in a video game or an advertisement? Should it be theirs forever, or should he get a cut, David?
I think Ed is absolutely on point on some aspects of that. I think there has to be appropriate sharing of that. I think that's different than paying a student athlete to play. I mean, we're actually talking, Ed's talking about his likeness years later on a video game. And so I think that's something that there's that lawsuit, and I think the NCAA is clearly aware of what needs to happen there. So I don't disagree with Ed's point on that. But I think that's completely different than actually paying a student athlete to play for a university.
Kevin Blackiston, where do you think this is going to end up? You put out a kind of a, you know, full Monty scenario there where you actually separate the teams and they go off kind of semi-pro. Mark Emmert with the NCAA is clearly way back in a more conservative posture than that, but he's talking about change here. What do you think may actually emerge from this conversation, Kevin?
Well, I think something's going to have to happen, and I think Ed's lawsuit really highlights that. I mean, last football season, we had a football player at Georgia by the name of A.J. Green, who was suspended for several games because he sold his used game jersey to someone for money. And so he had to sit out several games.
Right.
And then, of course, he had to pay the money back and gave it to a charity. Meanwhile, the university is selling this guy's jersey for up to, you know, $150 anywhere on the Internet. So the hypocrisy and the disingenuousness of what's going on in college sports as it relates to the athletes that bring in the money is just over the top, and something's got to be done. And that's why I say it is a sea change just to hear the head of the NCAA finally say, you know what, maybe we should look at some of this compensation package.
Well, it's Butler and UConn tonight for the men's championship. The money, yes, very big, and the conversation shifting here with time and with millions, billions of dollars at stake. Really fascinating to see how this thing rolls forward. David Williams at Vanderbilt, it's been great having you with us today. Thank you so much for your time and insights, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Tom.
And Ed O'Bannon in Henderson, Nevada. Ed, good luck with your suit. Thank you for joining us today, Ed.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
Kevin Blackiston, it is always great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks much, Tom.
This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.